From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hi, everyone. I hope everyone is enjoying the last part of their summer as August finishes up. We here at KEI have actually been quite busy because we are moving offices. We're staying in the same building, 1800 K, but we're moving down to the third floor. So for those of you who have come to some of our events, we will be on the third floor from now on. In light of that, today we have another rebroadcast episode of Korean Context. But I have some pretty great news as well. With our new space, we are actually going to have access to a soundproof studio down there in the new office. So the podcast audio quality will be even better, and we should be able to bring you some great content, including some video content in the future. So keep an eye out for that and look forward to that. For today's episode, we're bringing you an interview that was originally conducted in 2014. When we talked with Daniel Pinkston of the International Crisis Group. In this interview, he talks about South Korea's space program and how it is being used to enhance relations with South Korea's allies. He talks about the future of the space program, as well as some possible recommendations for how they can improve the space program in the future. So please enjoy this interview, and we will be back next week with a new episode for you.
Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. My name is Nicholas Hamasevich, Director of Research and Academic Affairs at KEI, and I will be your host today. In this episode, we talk with Dr. Daniel Pinkston about South Korea's space program. In addition to the great work he does on political and security issues related to the Korean Peninsula, Dr. Pinkston has written extensively on space and space policy concerning Korea and Asia. Dr. Pinkston's extensive academic paper series report for KEI examines many issues regarding Korea's space program, including the Park Geun-hye administration's plans and the areas where South Korea could focus its efforts for space exploration. Well, thanks, Dr. Pinkston, for joining us on Korean Context. You wrote a great paper for us on Korea's space program. Is there a big interest in space in Korea, do you think?
I think it depends on whom you ask. There are different interests because space is multidimensional and has many different applications and so forth. There are commercial applications, national defense applications, there are applications for environmental protection, resource management, and so forth. So I think if you really drill down into it, there are many people that have an interest while failing to realize the fundamental need for space-based assets to support what they see. So when they see something on the internet or they receive some service, they don't realize that outer space platform is necessary for them to receive that service. So if you're using an ATM or the internet, or you're making a phone call, or you're receiving some data about your farm or shipping and all of these other things, people don't make that connection, right? You just pick up the phone and you talk. You don't think of all of the infrastructure that's required to make that happen. So if people really stop and think about it, and if you ask them, okay, are you interested in space? Because if you're not, then you would have to forego these conveniences, then I think their answer, of course, would be affirmative.
Are there any scientists or politicians or champions for the space program in South Korea that people should know about or pay attention to?
There are some pockets of that, but I don't see it as a big issue area for any particular politicians, and maybe some people are escaping my memory at the moment. But I would say that if you look at the institutional structure and the legal structure and the authority of the president has a lot of discretion and power over the program. If the president is opposed or is not willing to support projects or programs, then it's very difficult or impossible for them to happen. The president can appoint people to positions, and if those people are not supportive or they're going to constrain the program or if they're going to be very strong advocates, you're going to have different outcomes. So I think the president's position is most important. I don't think it's too difficult to get the budgets passed. There is wrangling over the budget every year, the competition over budgets and resources, of course. And there are some people or institutions that look at that as a zero-sum game, and they believe that if the space budget is increased, then it's at their expense. But I think at the end of the day, when the final budget is put together, that you're not going to get a lot of opponents because there's a sense of scientific nationalism. Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy to support development in this area. There are a lot of spin-off applications, and as Korea is trying to move up the technology ladder, this resonates with a lot of people. So I think there is general support for it.
How does the Park Geun-hye administration look at space? Does she try to connect it with her creative economy vision?
Yes, very much so. You can see the connections to President Park's views on a future-oriented economy.
Okay.
And I think space capabilities are necessary and an integral part of her future-oriented economy and economic development. We can see those views reflected in the planning documents that have been released over the past year or so, starting with the medium and long-term space development plan that was released in November 2013. And then Korea's National Space Committee met. They had their seventh meeting in May of this year, May 30th of this year. And at the time of that meeting, they released a couple of documents. One was related to satellite applications, and the other was related to space security. And those were more detailed plans explaining how the government was going to execute the more general ideas that were reflected in last year's basic plan that was released in November 2013. So you can see the connection and the desire and the goals of developing new applications, new software, making these services, databases, software available to the general public, and the desire to have the government support the firms that are going to be moving into these commercial areas, and the effort to privatize some of these capabilities that are held within government agencies now, but to make them more sophisticated, more user-friendly, and open to public use across a broad range of issue areas, agriculture, the environment, marine issues, and so forth.
So you talked about how in those reports and in the creative thinking with space threats or space dangers is one of the things that they're looking at trying to work on. What was the impetus behind that? Did they have problems with satellites that they already had up there, or were they seeing other things that were going on either with countries in the region or around the world looking at space debris or threats and dangers to satellites that said, no, we really need to focus on this aspect as well when we're thinking about our space program?
Well, I think there were a couple of recent events that caused the government to look at this issue. It is an issue for everyone in all countries or private enterprises that have satellites in outer space, because those assets are very expensive. It's expensive to put them into Earth orbit, and they're vulnerable to this space debris problem that has been exacerbated recently by Chinese ASAT test back in 2007. And there was a recent collision between Iridium satellite and a Russian satellite, and this caused a great increase in space debris. So everyone who is concerned about it affects everyone. Korea, just like everyone else, has some interest and need to address this problem. So Republic of Korea is working on that. And then there's an interesting aspect of their space security policy, looking at natural objects as well that can hit assets in outer space. But they also look to protect assets on the ground, people and structures, the territory of the Republic of Korea. So those could be asteroids, meteorites that are large enough to strike the Earth, or large satellites that could survive reentry. There have been a couple incidents of that in the past. And as we gain the capacity, the ability to place larger structures into outer space, if they decay and fall out of orbit, some of those platforms can survive reentry. They might strike populated areas, for example. So that's one of the things Korea is looking at. So they're looking to deploy systems that can track the orbits and give some predictability, hopefully, in where some of these objects might reenter the atmosphere and where they might strike the Earth's surface. So they're trying to deploy that capability. And then there are a number of governmental institutions that are being, that are either in existence now or that will be stood up to react. First responders for a natural disaster, like if a meteorite were to hit or a satellite were to hit, even though it's a low probability event, it's not impossible. So they want to have the legal structure in place, the institutional structure in place to do that. First track the objects, to know if something's going to happen, and then to be able to respond and provide the information to the responders.
One of the interesting things in your paper was that some countries don't reveal all the data they have on space debris, often due to national security concerns. And you mentioned that the South Korean government believes that the U.S. doesn't share as much of its data that it has on space debris. And so is this lack of data sharing a problem in tracking space debris? And is South Korea trying to develop these systems and their capabilities because it feels it needs more information itself on space debris and space threats when they're looking at all these problems?
Certainly, I think that's the case, because the more assets you deploy into outer space, more vulnerabilities, right? So you want to protect those assets. You have more to lose. So there's a greater interest in tracking those objects. So, of course, it's natural that the Koreans want to have that capacity, and other space agencies, other countries that have this ability or more advanced capabilities will not share it, all of their data, as you said. One of the things I think they don't want to disclose all of their capabilities, because then if other countries knew exactly what they could track and the detail and precision which they could track, they might try to take some evasive measures or countermeasures or something like that. So some of that stuff might be sensitive and they want to protect it. And secondly, I think the U.S. has satellites in outer space that are providing reconnaissance and intelligence data, and that they do not want to reveal the orbits of those assets, because then it would tip off other countries. They might take countermeasures to downgrade or deceive the collection efforts.
So with South Korea, as a start, you know, it's kind of still working on its space program, still developing it. Is it looking to develop partnerships with other countries, do international cooperation, do international projects in space? Are there any countries in particular that South Korea is looking toward?
Yes, and there are a couple foundations or pillars of this effort. One, I would call this common objective of providing for public goods, and also protecting the commons of outer space. So in terms of public goods, things that are beneficial to people, things that, such as responding to humanitarian crisis, right? Let's say there's a hurricane, a natural disaster, earthquake, environmental disaster, an oil spill, search and rescue operations, and so forth. A recent example, relevant example, was the Malaysian Airlines flight that was lost. And a lot of countries had satellite data and other tracking data that they provided to the authorities that were searching for it, and tells you how difficult it is to track everything or to know everything. The flight or the debris from the flight still has not been found. But there was an example of countries coming forward and providing what they had. And you can think of other relevant examples. I mean, there was a recent typhoon in the Philippines that caused tremendous damage and so forth. And more countries are forming partnerships. And since you don't have complete coverage of everything everywhere, if you can pool the data and provide the data that you have that covers these different geographic areas, then it helps everyone respond. So you might be a victim of such a disaster at some point in the future. It would be nice to have data from others or partners that would help you in your response. So this is a cooperative effort that's going on in East Asia, and Korea wants to cooperate in that, and they are. And as they acquire greater capacity to collect satellite data and have broader and deeper databases and information that they can share, they will do that on a humanitarian basis. And the second part, I would say, is this import substitution aspect. So Korea is looking for international partners to acquire technology to work projects together. Well, there's mutual benefit as well. If they work on a scientific project, let's say, the science in both countries is furthered and we're able to gain a number of benefits from that. But also going through those projects, then Korea can acquire technology to do more space exploration, do more things in space independently without having to form partnerships. So reducing the reliance on foreign technology, I think, is also an objective in some of this international cooperation.
Are there any possibilities for South Korea-Japan cooperation in space? Would it probably be more in that first pillar of humanitarian assistance and tracking? Would it be more in that kind of pillar where you would see the possibilities of South Korea-Japan cooperation in space?
I think that's the case so far, and there already is cooperation in terms of data sharing for humanitarian assistance or disaster relief. So that's ongoing. I don't think that's a problem, of course. That can be deepened as there are more data to share. Another area where there's possibility for data sharing, but it's very sensitive, is the case of missile defense. So some of these space-based assets and ground-based assets that have been deployed and will be deployed for tracking, for early warning, for what the South Koreans are trying to do in their space security or space threats or danger program. Those facilities and assets also have national security component or applications. I'm not a aerospace engineer or a scientist, so I can't say with certainty. It's a topic I wish to explore more and do more research on. But it seems to me that the capability to track a meteorite or a satellite that's entering the Earth's atmosphere at that high velocity and size, that you could also track other objects such as ballistic missiles, maybe that would be launched from North Korea or elsewhere. And then that data could be fed into a missile defense system or interceptors that could knock down the missile before it strikes territory, say in the Republic of Korea or Japan or the United States or other allied or friendly territory. So at this point, that type of cooperation and pulling up data, tracking data, for missile intercept purposes is extremely sensitive, and there's no cooperation there. There's thinking about it. Some people are thinking about it, how that might be managed, or if it were to occur from this technical perspective, it makes sense. Republic of Korea is deploying a KAMD, or Korea Air and Missile Defense System. They wish to have the capability to intercept North Korean missiles if the Republic of Korea were to come under a missile attack, but they're reluctant or hesitant at this point to accept data or to be integrated into a U.S. system or Japanese system or trilateral system. But just technically speaking, if you have more data, tracking data from radars and space-based systems and what have you, so whatever you have, the more data you can feed into the targeting, the greater the likelihood of intercept when you have to fire your interceptor. So it makes sense, technical perspective, but politically it's very, very sensitive. And that, of course, is not happening at this point. But we'll see in the future what happens with that.
A lot of times, some of these space programs and for Korea developing its space launch vehicles, non-proliferation concerns come up. How much does non-proliferation treaties and non-proliferation concerns hold back Korea as it tries to develop its space program?
That's a very good question, because it has impacted the development of South Korea's space launch vehicles. The United States over the years has had a great interest in nonproliferation and has used its influence in the region in the past decades to prevent or reduce proliferation of nuclear weapons, chemical weapons, biological weapons, ballistic missiles, because according to U.S. national interests, and I agree personally, these systems and weapons can be destabilizing, and they kill in mass numbers non-combatants and so forth. And states that wish to overturn the international order, the U.S. built a system international organizations and institutions in the post-World War II era, the IMF, the UN, the World Bank, and so forth, to build and maintain an open international order, right? Freedom of navigation on the seas, free and open trading system, market-oriented economy, freedom of economic institutions to uphold liberal trading system and financial system and so forth. So the U.S. seeks to maintain this type of liberal order, generally speaking, if we look at the international system. And there are some actors in the international system, both state and non-state actors, who are dissatisfied and would like to destroy this kind of order, this international order. So for some of those actors, that is the appeal of WMD, nuclear weapons, ballistic missiles. So if they could launch a nuclear attack against the U.S. and its friends and allies, this could have a catastrophic effect, devastating effect that could undermine or destroy this the current international world order. So that's why the U.S. has been opposed to proliferation of these systems, has strongly been opposed. And that's been U.S. policy, bipartisan, very, very strong consensus for that. So long explanation here, but that is why the U.S. has had this consistent position to neither support nor obstruct South Korean space program, but to have a very strong non-proliferation orientation. They do not want to support the program, particularly in the area of space launch vehicles, because it has dual use applications. And even if South Korea is in compliance, which they are, and I don't think the U.S. government suspects that Republic of Korea is going to use this as a cover for building ICBMs and so forth. But nevertheless, the suspicions and reactions to that can undermine U.S. objectives because the many believe that Republic of Korea expands these capabilities, also a nuclear fuel cycle, for example, then it becomes more difficult to roll back the North Korean program. Even though I don't agree with the argument, but particularly North Korea, we use this as justification to further their own space launch capabilities, which is being used to develop ICBMs and has, looking at the military applications. So even though Republic of Korea's activities are not directly related to proliferation, the cascading effects and the influence on other actors result in a negative outcome. So that's why the U.S. takes these positions, not that the U.S. has some direct opposition or problem with the Republic of Korea, but this is a reflection of a complicated security environment in Northeast Asia.
How much more help and effort from the private sector and aviation industries will the South Korean government need to build a larger space program?
That's a difficult question. I guess there's a quantitative and qualitative component of that question. I'm in a difficult position to answer that with any level of expertise. I could pay more attention, or it could be a completely different paper, of course,
sure.
A research project, which was not the focus of this, was just to give an overview. But nevertheless, I think the general trend in the U.S. and elsewhere has been to privatize or commercialize many of these technologies as they become standard systems and so forth, when it becomes kind of regular technology that's reliable and firms or private sector can do it, then the idea is to transfer it to them. And then where you need government-led research and development because of the risks and the high costs involved, you're looking at some areas where private firms are unwilling to make those investments because the likelihood of a positive return on the investment is maybe too low for them to take that risk, so you don't see the movement. So in some of the frontier technologies that are very risky and very, very expensive, you might need government coordination or government going alone to take on those risks and costs. But once something becomes standardized, then the idea is to move to the private sector. So I think most space programs are going in that direction gradually. That's what the South Korean plan is. And they want to build up that base of private sector firms. They're a little bit behind, but they're working on that. And aggressively will be pursuing that in the next 5 to 10 years.
For South Korea's space program right now, based on the paper, it seems that their focus is satellites and space threats. Is that correct, or do you see any other areas that the South Korean space program might go into?
I think those are the big focuses, but You also left off space launch vehicles, which is an important component. They are committed to that. It's a little later in their development. You look at other programs like the former Soviet Union or the United States in the early years. You look at the North Korean program now, for example. Many of these were at least dual pursuit of military and civilian applications because dual use technologies. Some of them are very military weighted or weighted very strong towards military. For North Korea, for example, they focused on missiles first. So looking at the military applications, what they were really pursuing, and then the satellite component, the ability to launch a satellite into Earth orbit, was kind of an afterthought in my view. So slightly different approach. South Korean case, they really pursued the satellite applications first. They've been gaining that expertise. And then the space launch vehicle development has come later, which for historical reasons and institutional reasons, things, legal reasons, which I mentioned in the paper, is that's somewhat of an anomaly as well, or special case. So the North Korean case and South Korean case are very, very different. But to have a broad, fully independent space program and capabilities across the board, it includes the space launch capacity and ability to launch when you want, what you want, and not being dependent upon others. So they're pursuing that. The satellites, the space-based platforms, deep space probes, which will be coming on later. And then it's a natural follow-on to that is your concerns about those assets. So as you have more and more in space, then you have more to lose, right? There are more assets that are vulnerable, so you start thinking naturally more and more about the threats to those assets. So the Republic of Korea is leaning forward on this and looking to deploy a lot of systems that they hope will deal with some of those threats, space-based threats.
Any possibility of Korea pursuing a manned space program? I know they recently had their astronaut or their one Korean citizen that was able to go into the International Space Station. She retired from the space program. So any possibility of Korea trying to do manned flight, or is it all focused on things that you previously mentioned?
Well, for the time being, there are no concrete plans. The Korea Aerospace Research Institute and the Korean government do not reject it outright, but the current position is that there should be some justification. So based on scientific applications or some other development or the need. So based on the need, they will pursue that. There are no astronauts being trained now. There are no plans for that. There's no budget for that. But when the opportunity arises and when there's justification to send people in space to support scientific experiments or other projects, then I think the training and all the other support mechanisms that need to be in place will naturally follow. But without the justification, I don't think we're going to see it happen. Could be revisited later if we see Korea roll out these more advanced and more powerful boosters, the KSLV-3 and KSLV-4, then they would have the capacity to launch the capsules and the systems that would support manned spaceflight, right? There's a lot of stuff you have to send up.
Right.
There's no air, there's no water, there's no food in outer space, and all those things to support human life have to go up in a payload when a robot or a satellite does not need all that stuff. So it's expensive to launch that stuff up there. You need a big rocket to do it. And at this point, probably does not have that indigenous capability to launch a human man payload or capsule in space. So they'll revisit at some point in the future.
I know people don't like this term, but there's a thought that there's an Asia space race. You have China getting into space more and more, India doing more with space and having satellites and vessels going to the moon and elsewhere. And then Japan has a solid program. Does Korea see themselves in a race, or do they see themselves in a area where people in Asia are doing space, so Korea has to do space or has to be part of that or has to be cognizant of everyone else working toward space and space opportunities? Or is Korea seeing it as more specifically geared toward what they're trying to do as a country and not necessarily competing or recognizing what other countries are doing as far as their space programs.
I think some of the space exploration activities and space launch activities have been focused on this idea of scientific nationalism. And some politicians exploit that, for example, or some people in the domestic political arena will latch on to this issue area and seek some political gain by being a champion of these spectacular projects that gain a lot of public attention. So that is a reflection sometimes in some ways of the overall political environment, the international political environment. So we've seen waves of this in the recent past where we've seen this surging nationalism in many countries across Asia. And it goes in cycles, I would say. And at some of those peak times, we've seen the exploitation of these scientific capabilities, whether it's some deep sea probe or a space launch or some new aircraft or any kind of new discovery. Some people will try to use that for their political gains and put a nationalist sticker on the project or the result. But I haven't seen so much of that in South Korea. Now, maybe I'm biased or maybe I'm not seeing it. And I would say that there's a sense of nationalism in Korea and everywhere. Every country that has a space program that puts a satellite in space or puts humans into outer space, there's a lot of pride and national pride. And just pride as human beings. I think when you look at impressive scientific achievements, a lot of people are impressed. Some individuals are more political than others and try to make these political connections, of course. So we see that. Certainly there is a sense of pride in Korea, whether it's space program or any other kind of endeavor where there's an impressive scientific achievement or there's a new commercial application that has been discovered that helps people. It increases their comfort in everyday life and creates conveniences. So I think there's that sense, but as far as a kind of intense emotional fervor over this or an intense nationalism that people rally around the space program, I think that's probably pretty low. It's much lower than when you see the World Cup team or the World Cup going on or Olympic sports. I think it's much more intense. So I would say it's more of a kind of reserved but strong national pride, but it doesn't go over into the realm of jingoism and a kind of negative nationalistic sentiment.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Pinkston. This is really great talking to you about these issues, and we appreciate you writing the paper and talking to us about Korea's space program. Thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Our guest today was Dr. Daniel Pinkston, Deputy Director for Northeast Asia with the International Crisis Group, and also an expert on Korea and Asia space programs. Thank you so much for listening to KEI's Korean Context podcast, and we hope you will join us again next time.